right from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh James Show, with, as usual, plenty on my mind, but in this first hour, I've got someone to join me. We're about to meet Dr. Jane Orient. She is Executive Director of AAPS. You know, I reference the group often as the sane alternative to the AMA. I should point out, though, that the AMA itself only has 17% of all MDs as members. So I know that Obama would like to make that the be-all, end-all as far as doctors' feelings on anything, since he's got them on their side on health care now. But 17% is hardly a majority. And by the way, if you think the AMA is mainstream, this is the same organization that just a couple of years ago signed on to global warming. Now, I know you might be wondering what that has to do with your health, but over the years, the AMA has gotten increasingly political, increasingly away from the Hippocratic Oath, and the botched photo op passing out white coats on the White House lawn the other day is just the tip of the iceberg. But as I say, I reference AAPS a lot, so I thought it was high time that you met Dr. Jane Orient, the executive director. I've got links at raleigh.net to aapsonline.org, as well as some terrific articles that have been up lately, including Dr. Jane's take on Obama's speech to the joint session that I know you're going to want to read. But not only that, we'll talk about it, I'm sure. Obama mistakenly invited an opponent to stand up for him at the White House, and we'll hear about that fella, too. I've got a link to his article. I wish that he was not so dedicated to medicine and that he did show up, because that could have been a field day, but his priorities are in the right place. And we also have a wonderful article from a neurosurgeon, an open letter to why doctors need to be even more concerned about Obamacare than maybe some have come to realize. So all that and a lot more, and you're about to meet Dr. Jane in moments.
The Raleigh James Show.
But first I want to mention gold a moment. Yeah, you've heard it went through the roof yesterday, and actually a lot of people are, oh, should I have bought gold? You don't buy gold because of where it is in terms of on the market. You buy gold for one reason and one reason alone, not because it's going up or down or anything like that, but because it's never going to be worthless. Unlike any other investment you can make, including putting money in the bank, gold will always have value. But there's no shortage of people selling you down the river on this, and a lot of people are very disappointed with their gold purchase when they go to sell it. So before you buy gold from anybody, you should understand exactly how gold is sold among the traders who deal with gold. And it's not a very difficult equation. If you go to discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, you'll get a good idea. Discountgoldandsilvertrading.net, not a place to buy online, but you will get some great information. This is Melody's site. Melody has been executing trades on the gold market for over 15 years now. She knows her stuff. She's not a salesman, a middleman, a broker. She actually executes the trade she will sell to the public, but there's no pressure to do so in any way. Now, when you read the frequently asked questions and the latest news and all that, you're going to discover that all of gold, no matter what you buy it as a product. It's the only way you can buy it. And those products are priced differently in two rough categories. You're either buying something that's bullion, meaning that no matter what it looks like or how pretty it is, it's like the jewelry you buy, all it's worth is, if they melted it down, how much gold is in there. It's the melt value. That's all bullion is. On the other hand, some products are numismatic. Now, those are collectible items, certain rare coins, St. Gaudens, $20 liberties from 100 years ago. They are collectible, so they have a premium. Now, there's reasons to buy bullion and reasons to buy numismatic. Only a fool pays numismatic prices for bullion, and a lot of people are today. So get to know gold. Give Melody a call, 800-375-4188. Ask all the questions you want. When you think you know what you're doing, look at everybody's ad and sales pitch. And if they tell you they're going to keep the gold for you, run for the hills. Part of the value is you take possession of the metal. If they tell you, buy it because it's going way up, run. They don't know that, and you don't either. If they tell you to buy a stock that's based on gold, that's the stock market. Stay away. Buy the metal. Now, once you are ready to make a purchase, you know, I think you're going to come back to Melody at Discount Gold and Silver. The reason is nobody beats your commission rate. That's the discount. Never a minimum order, so there's no games there. You want to buy one coin, that's fine. Fastest shipping in the industry, but above all, integrity you can count on. She has the experience base to know what she's doing and the integrity to tell you the truth. That's the only reason that I buy from Melody, and she's the only person I buy from. I trust her. Discount Gold and Silver Trading.net, 800-375-4188. You remember to tell them that Raleigh sent you. Dr. Jane Orient, welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Well, thank you. I like every opportunity to try to explain to people what's really going on.
Well, and thank you for that. I've been talking till I'm blue in the face, but of course you're on the front line of this, and there's no shortage of people who will claim your everything from hysterical to nuts to try and minimize the fact that you are telling the truth.
Well, people don't have to believe me. If they will read the bill for themselves, they can find out whether or not what I'm saying makes sense.
Well, by the way, let me interrupt there and say something that the Senate now is proudly claiming. The senators who are going to vote on this proudly playing they don't saying they don't plan to read this bill. Right there, that should scare the living hell out of every American. But if you had to pick the top three things, and that's real hard to do, Dr. Jane, I know, but the top three things that you say, here is what is most concerning, what are they?
The most important thing is the mandate to buy insurance. This will force people to buy insurance. It will make it a crime not to buy insurance, and insurance is what they say it is. It will be a far more comprehensive plan that you might have chosen to buy now. It will be one that has a very limits on copayments and deductibles, but no limits on the annual benefits that could be covered. So that means that the price is going to go up. The Congressional Budget Office just came out with an estimate for that a family of four that's now paying $12,000 for their insurance plan will be paying $19,000 for it.
Yeah.
And if they don't like that, well, then they can maybe pay a $25,000 fine and go to jail.
Let me ask you on this, because you hit on something that is probably I can consider to be the bill's big Achilles heel on insurance. There are many people who are very responsible who have, say, catastrophic coverage that's very reasonable to them. They're willing to pay, say, the first $10,000 a year out of pocket, and they're willing to manage their care. But if a catastrophe hits, they're covered. Those policies will become illegal, won't they?
Yes, they will. I have a policy like that, and it's one that I very much like.
Yeah.
I don't want to change it. I've never filed an insurance claim in my life, although I've bought quite a bit of medical care
mm-hmm.
and paid for it at the time of service, just like I pay for groceries. But this will supposedly be grandfathered in until the company that sells it makes any change in the policy or accepts a single new customer.
Which, by the way,
becomes illegal.
Right, which, as soon as you said, and I agree with what you're saying, because I read that part of the bill, too, and ultimately everybody's in Obamacare because one change accepts one customer. So right there, that's every private policy ceases to exist, because if they don't accept new customers, forget about it. And as far as making changes, they do every year. So we're SOL on that. But even the person who's secure at work who says, well, I got my work insurance, well, if they quit that job, they don't get to pick their insurance. They go into Obamacare.
Well, Obamacare claims that we'll have a choice, but it's a choice between A, B, and C, all of which have to be just about exactly alike.
Right.
And will be things that a sensible person would never choose to buy, because it's not really insurance. It's a prepayment for everything that they feel like covering. And by the way, it's important to realize that just because they cover it doesn't mean that you can get it.
Like
if you live in Canada, everything is covered, but you might not get it for a year or two or until after you're dead, and you will get it in a hospital that is overcrowded, shabby, filthy, doesn't have up-to-date equipment, and so on.
Now, okay, so I got lots to say, but let's see. Point number one is a mandate to buy insurance. I agree. That's very frightening. Point number two that really scares the living daylights out of you?
Well, I think that the government is going to define quality, and it's going to be deciding what sort of care is cost-effective, and they've got this thing that has been called the Reaper curve, that that says that people of a certain age, like who are over about 10 years old and under about 40 or 50 years old, they're the ones who are of most value to society. So a year of their life is worth more than the year of a little kid or somebody who's already over the hill. And so they will be first in line to get those services that will still be available.
You know, when you mentioned the government defining quality, that also extend. In fact, I hadn't really thought very much about this aspect of it, but they talked about how they were going to grade the competence of the physician, and I learned from your website, yeah, what they're really grading is whether the physician goes along with the cookbook, cookie-cutter medicine. Any physician that actually treats someone as an individual is going to be graded downward.
Exactly.
Now, that should scare everyone, because I think we all believe that we are each individual, and we know we have commonalities, but in terms of our biology, it doesn't take a neurosurgeon to realize that every one of us has a unique metabolism and a unique biology, and a healer is as much an artist as a scientist, and what we rely on when we say he's my favorite doctor or she's my favorite physician, we're relying on their judgment and their experience, not what they looked up in the Merck manual.
Yes, well, that's the art and science of medicine, but it's worse than that. Zeke Emanuel, who was very influential in the administration, he truly believes that one of the biggest problems with American medicine is the oath of Hippocrates, in which the physician is responsible for the good of an individual patient. He thinks doctors should be putting the good of society first.
Yes, yes.
And you don't want your doctor to be looking at the good of the whole society instead of you.
And that's the NHS plan. That's exactly what goes wrong in Great Britain, and we talk about that almost every night. So I would agree, yes, government regulating quality, you betcha. Your third point that you say, oh, man.
Well, they claim that we're going to have more services available, but this absolutely cannot be the case. They are going to be covering everything by insurance, very expensive insurance that you have to buy whether you like it or not. So everybody's going to be demanding to get their money's worth. They will be lining up for care when they're well, so they get some value out of their money. And there will be fewer doctors. There will be fewer facilities. Doctors will be paid less. A lot of them are going to be dropping out of their profession. So we're going to have an enormous increase in demand and a decrease in availability. And what does that mean? It means they're going to have to deny care.
Yeah, it has to be rationed.
That's the only way they can save costs. But even if costs were not an object, they're going to be denying care because it simply will not be there.
Now, they've been trying to get us on socialized medicine, really, I guess, since the start of the AAPS in the 40s. At the time, the AMA, even through the 60s, was steadfast against it, even the 70s. Now the AMA, which, as I mentioned, is only 17% of physicians, but people in general look at it as the de facto organization. They've
17%,
done,
not
yeah,
70%.
Yeah, I said 17, absolutely, 17%,
yeah, right.
1-7, that's less than 20%, less than 1 in 5 are members. And with 17%, obviously they're not the be-all and end-all, but the real question is, they used to be squarely on the side of medicine, squarely on the side of the doctor, on individuality. Now they can't wait to embrace the plan. What changed in that organization?
Well, they're not even representing the 17% of doctors who are members. They're representing their own business interests. I think what happened, the most important thing that happened, was they got this very lucrative contract with the government to be the sole provider of the CPT codes. Those are the procedure codes that are used for billing Medicare.
Oh, my God.
And they make perhaps $70 million a year in revenue from these, from selling books and licensing the codes. And if the government were to withdraw that contract, they'd be out of business. So they can't really advocate too strenuously for physicians if it offends the main source of their revenue.
Right, right. No, they're compromised right there by taking that. And I assume that 17% is a lower number than it was before they did such things. I would hope that more physicians are saying, no way am I supporting this.
It's been steadily decreasing.
Yeah, it would almost have to. And I would think that the AAPS is steadily growing.
We've been growing.
Yeah, for all the right reasons.
More doctors become aware of us, and they're beginning to see through all of this government rhetoric that this is about compassion, when in fact, if you read the plan, it becomes obvious after less than 10 pages, it's really about control. Control over what constitutes insurance, control over what physicians can do for their patients, control over who's going to be deciding what constitutes science, who's going to be making the decision, who's going to be placing a value on a patient's life.
One of the things that's really changed over the last several years, I guess it came to the forefront after World War II with groups like Kaiser Permanente, are these HMOs, which is prepaid medical. And for a while, it seemed as if the public was catching on to things like the withhold and things like the rationing of services. But when I'm listening to Obama, even in his own words, in the speech that you so well dissected, and he says, "You will not have to change your doctor," I always hear that in the singular, and the first thing I think is every one of his plans will have a gatekeeper that will make an HMO look like heaven.
Yes, you will have to have a gatekeeper, just like in Canada. You can't get to a specialist unless you get a referral from a primary physician. So I think he words this very artfully. He says that nothing in the plan will require you to change your doctor, but it doesn't say anything about the likelihood that your doctor's still going to be there.
Well, it also doesn't say doctors, plural, because any of us who are users of the medical profession because, say, we have chronic illness, every one of us, I think, can name a handful of doctors we use for different purposes. Well, we're not.
Exactly.
It's not.
You'll be stuck in your medical home, right, which is your medical gatekeeper. That's just a fancy word for it.
And your gatekeeper is rewarded for not referring you.
Yes, he's paid by capitation. And this is one of the things that people hated so much about HMOs and why so many of them have had to change their method. Well, what's happening? They're going to go back to it. In Massachusetts, this highly touted plan, they're going to go back to some sort of capitation for all physicians because they've got to get a grip on the prices.
Sure they do.
I mean, on the expenditures.
Well, that's it. And if it was only that alone, when Obama talks about how he's going to fund this with his savings, firstly, if the waste and fraud were big enough to fund this whole plan, then why would we believe the government could create a universal plan for all of us that wouldn't have the same waste and fraud? But never mind that logic. If the waste and fraud were that big, well, like I say, we'll do away with the plans entirely. But the waste and fraud isn't that big, so that means the only way that you can fund it on the back of existing programs is to significantly cut those programs. And so, of course,
well, remember, their definition of waste, fraud, and abuse includes unnecessary services. Doesn't matter if they benefit the patient, but if the bureaucrat decides that it wasn't really necessary, it can be put in the same category as criminal fraud.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because they do. They define what's necessary. This goes back to the cookbook medicine. And so your physician believes you'll benefit from a treatment. If he provides it for you and it's not on their list, that's fraud. And that's beyond frightening. And fortunately, a lot of seniors have awakened to what this means. And many of them have been going semi-ballistic, bless their souls. Of course, the AARP, which is a lot like the AMA and how liberal they are on this, they are claiming their own membership as befuddled, confused, misled, lied to, what have you. You also have the situation where some of the insurers who, yes, they stand to lose, but sending letters to their subscribers, now the government has put a muzzle on that. Say, you tell the people the truth, they don't phrase it that way, and you lose your government contracts. That is frightening as all get out.
Well, of course, you must remember that a lot of insurance companies have given a lot of money to the both legislators of both parties.
Of course.
Because they think it's really wonderful to force people to buy their product. So they're not telling them about that either.
No, they're not. They're not. But even on the situations like Humana, which makes half of its money at least from the Medicare companion plans, there was a muzzle put on them so quickly your head would have spun.
Yeah, exactly. Just for telling the people what the plan actually says, which is that Medicare Advantage plans will be, if not completely done away with, will have their funding severely cut.
And now what they're saying is, of course, they're continuing to claim that you and I are lunatics and that we're orchestrating others to get involved against them, so to speak. But now, in addition to being proud of not reading the bill, you hear the Senate talking about reconciliation, which is an evil way to get something through against the will of the people and fellow congressmen. They'll stop at nothing to pass this.
Well, I'm afraid that to them it doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't even matter what's in the bill, whether they think it's a good bill or not. They're going by the threats or promises that have been made to them.
Right.
And in fact, maybe what's in the bill is only part of the story. I believe it was John Conyers who sort of made fun of the idea of reading the bill, saying, well, it's 1,000 pages, it would take me 2 days and 2 lawyers to understand it. But even then he couldn't understand it because there's going to be 100,000 pages of regulations that haven't been made up yet. This is just the enabling legislation to turn all of these decisions over to people who are, by design, completely unaccountable to any voters.
Right, and also by design, completely bereft of knowledge about medicine. We have a lot of union executives and things like that who are going to be on the board to determine health care.
And there'll be know-it-alls, that's for sure, but there will be know-nothings at the same time.
Yeah.
And their word will be final.
Right. Right, and this is a fight to the death, literally, for many people. And I'm encouraged that more people are awakening. But as you look at this, and you've been studying this, and I know you've been on this for a long time, and for anybody who doesn't know, Dr. Jane is a Columbia University MD. You're no slouch in the medical field, so it's not like you're some alternative lunatic, as they like to say. You're the real deal. And you've been looking at this quite a long time. Do you think they're going to get this through?
I really don't know. It's a declaration of war on the American people, as some Tea Party patriots said this very evening.
Yes.
They are desperate to get it through before the end of December because they think that after that point they won't be able to get it through, which, if they're so frightened, it suggests that we have a chance and we have got to defeat this.
How many doctors are actively working, do you think, to defeat it?
Most of the doctors are working, taking care of their patients.
Of course.
Maybe there are several thousand. I mean, there were more than 1,000 of them in D.C. on September 10th at their own expense,
right,
standing outside in the Upper Senate Park. I mean, the president invited 50 of them to come to his office, and I think they were mostly his friends except for that one mistake they made and had to hand out the white coats. Our doctors showed up at their own expense with their own white coats, stood out in the park, also went to visit their congressman, and there were about 1,500 of them.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all the coverage the photo op of the white-coated crowd got. We were laughing last night saying, God, we hope that the egg producers don't ever show up. They'll wear chicken suits. And it might as well have been that with this. Yet the September meeting of the doctors against the care got a blip on the landscape anywhere.
Well, I think this wire service said there were 120 people there, but you look at the films, you can see it was 10 times that many.
Well, you know, but Dr. Jane, that makes perfect sense because they also say this plan is not going to cost us $1 trillion. So when you look at their math, they're obviously operating in a base we don't understand. That probably comes up to 120 because this will cost us $1 trillion. We've got Dr. Jane Orient with us. And by the way, what it'll cost us in dollars pales by what it will cost us personally for our health care and our liberty, of course. AAPSonline.org is the website. I've got links at Raleigh.net to that, and the open letter to physicians, which was so well written by a neurosurgeon in Florida. So check that out, too. We will continue on the Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
Well, it ain't the measles, and it ain't the flu. Just a little old virus, type of Y-O-U. I'm coming down, coming down with love. It was kiss you once or twice. Ooh, my lips are like fur, and my hands are like ice. I'm coming down,
down, down, coming down with love. Angels of land, I'm sinking fast. If this is dying, who wants to last? Now don't you call on no doctor, don't you call on no nurse. I don't want to get better, I just want to get worse.
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show.
Mel Gibson's Coming Down with Love. I always laugh when I play that. Yeah, if you don't want to get better and you want to get worse, like Mel there, well, Obamacare is for you, guaranteed. Every one of your wishes will be granted. Unfortunately, for the rest of us, not quite that simple. We're talking with Dr. Jane Orient of AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Been around since the 40s, not a new organization, and one heck of a good one. And most people think that the AMA is for everyone as a doctor, and as we were saying earlier, 17% of MDs are members of the AMA. That means the majority are not. So to think that if the AMA says it's fine, then it must be good for us, don't go there. Start to take a look at aapsonline.org. I also have a link to the membership, and you can join, even if you're not in the medical profession. And if you are a med student, you can join for free. So you may want to check that out. We'll get back to it, because some of this is already passed, and you know that, like your health records. I know. Be afraid. Very afraid.
The Raleigh James Show.
I want to mention OIDA here for a moment. And, you know, if you are a commercial driver, whether you're a company driver or an independent owner-operator, there's a lot of forces against you. Yeah, like all of Capitol Hill, right? There's only one organization exclusively devoted to your betterment, and that one organization is OIDA, OOIDA.com. They got about 160,000 members, but you know there's about 5 million commercial drivers on the road, and it doesn't matter, like I say, if you're company or independent. It also doesn't matter what you're driving or where you're driving it or any of that. You're driving commercially, OIDA has your back. Now, I'm on a one-woman campaign to get that membership up to about 1 million, and the reason is simple. Well, for one thing, that would only mean 1 in 5 drivers, and I think we can do that. For another thing, it's 6.8 cents a day, so that's $25 a year. I think you can afford that. But the big issue here and why I want you to join is not for the great benefits, and they're numerous, or for the wonderful information that may be exactly what saves you. Even if you have no interest in joining, I am saying if you are a commercial driver, you've got to join, and here's why. Since they are the only body that exclusively lobbies for you on Capitol Hill, the strength of their argument on your behalf is only as strong as their membership is large, period. It's that simple. More members, more clout. Right now, OIDA gets in the room, makes their presentation. They are respected. They are considered. There's such a gulf between considered and having a seat at the table and your views must being incorporated into legislation at hand, and that's what I want for the driver. No shortage of people fighting against you. Make the only organization that is exclusively fighting for your betterment stronger, and the only way to do that is by joining. The good news, like I say, it's easy. $25 for your first year dues. You can do it online at OOIDA.com anytime. OOIDA.com. There's a Join Now link, and when you click on it, a form pops up, and you'll know what to do. When you get to membership code, put Raleigh James, an amount, put $25, and that's it. You're in. Now, if you want to do the whole thing by phone, 800-444-5791, 800-444-5791. You say Raleigh James, you pay $25, and I guarantee you it'll be the best $25 you've ever spent. You know, when we're talking about things like trying to defeat health care, it's the same principle exactly. Enough Americans aware and involved, things happen. Enough members into OIDA, they're at the table. Be one of them. Please join. Well, that was supposed to do something that it didn't, and so I'll just go back to Dr. Jane Orient. And, you know, the HIPAA Act for me was almost the final straw when there were people, especially when I'd refused to sign it, and all I was signing was that I got a copy of it, as you well know, who would say, well, this is for your privacy. HIPAA is the furthest thing from your privacy as we can get, isn't it?
Absolutely. The doctor is required to ask you to sign a form saying that you know you don't have any privacy. Basically, that's the translation of what it means. And if you don't sign it, it doesn't really make any difference,
right,
as long as he documents that he asks you to sign it. But some doctors may actually throw you out as a patient. Consider that a red flag because you ask too many questions.
It happened to me. That's why I'm so testy on this, because I even carry the code around that says they can't do that. But frankly, as far as I'm concerned, if a doctor's throwing me out for that, I didn't want to go there anyway. But what's really alarming about this, as you well know, is it's not just sharing it with your insurance company or things like this. We're talking about over 600,000 covered entities. So when they say they won't give your records to anyone unauthorized, 600,000 entities are authorized. Now, we add that, Dr. Jane, to what happened in the stimulus bill. Now it's mandated all this be electronically available.
Apparently so, and they want to move the deadline up from 2014 to 2010. And as David Blumenthal said, we're going to get nationalized health care through electronic medical records. There's a lot of things in your medical records, and there's more and more things that doctors are supposed to put in there, like your beliefs, whether you have a gun, your family problems. There are all kinds of things that are in there that could do you a lot of harm if they fell into the hands of a blackmailer or your ex-spouse or your employer or the bank that might be considering making you a loan or the law enforcement agency that might be considering prosecuting you for something in your past.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things will be in a centralized electronic database, or at least that could be found for such a database.
Yeah, and this is even without talking about the hacking, which, of course, as we both know, is pretty easy.
The government is terrible at keeping their records secure.
Yeah, 15-year-olds can hack if they have enough time in their bedroom, so that's ridiculous. But even looking at the standpoint of who they're authorizing, over 600,000 entities, and as you say, things like gun ownership, and, you know, it's bad enough when we as adults face these problems, but one of the worst is what's going on with pediatric medicine, where in the name of it's for the children, parents are literally being torn from their children, sometimes by their physicians. So with that in mind, how best for a parent to interview a physician before determining that this would be a good pediatrician?
Oh, that is difficult. I suppose you could find out whether or not he has a networked electronic record now. I guess that won't help you too much after everyone has them. They're not going to be required to have them to practice medicine yet, but they will be required to have them to collect from these approved insurance plans,
right,
including Medicare and Medicaid.
Right, exactly, which is 99% of all these people, unfortunately.
Well, it's getting to be fewer. There are more and more physicians who are deciding that they just can't practice that way, and they're going to practice in a direct patient practice that the patients will pay them, and the patient's records will be secure, and the patients and the doctor will make the decisions.
Which I think is absolutely best as long as that remains legal, but we all know of the doctor, I'm sure you're aware of this too, it's happened more than once, doctors who, for instance, have offered to patients, hey, pay me $500 a year and you'll be able to have X number of visits and my attention and all that, and states have shut them down saying you're selling insurance.
Well, states have tried to shut them down. I think that sometimes that's been successfully fought, and it is a growing practice model.
I think it's a great model, but so you're telling me that there are some doctors who have prevailed in this?
Yes, I believe so.
That is excellent news, because a doctor should be able to determine how he's going to get paid in a private arrangement. It goes without saying.
It also cuts costs. Can it cut costs by 50% or even more? There's a surgery center in Oklahoma where the prices are 20% of what most hospitals are charging, and they collect payment cash in advance. But it's a wonderful facility. People love working there. People always want to come back there once they've had a procedure there. And their prices are amazingly low.
Is there anything in the current bill that would lead you to believe that such places will be outlawed?
I think they will find it much more difficult to operate, simply because if everyone is forced to buy insurance, people will have less and less money that they could spend for medical care.
Yeah,
they will already have prepaid it for other people's medical care.
Right.
And even if they want to pay for it themselves after having done so, they may not be able to afford it.
Traditionally, some of the best at keeping government health care at bay were alternative practitioners, so to speak. Unfortunately, now many of them have been swept up into CAM, supposedly complementary medicine, and are held the carrot out that, well, you'll get reimbursement from insurance. And more we're seeing people who were on the periphery before proudly who are now just thrilled to be part of the epicenter. And I don't know if you've been noticing that, but I'm alarmed at one of our biggest allies in this, the alternative medicine field, has pretty much disappeared.
I don't think it's disappeared. I think that some of them are beginning to wake up that if the insurance company pays and the insurance company controls them and they are not friendly to them, and they may find that some of their procedures are acceptable, but still they are not free, and there will be other procedures that are not acceptable.
One of the things that Congress is talking about doing, if they have to, is this reconciliation. Of course, if they go for that, they're really going to be getting this in piecemeal. And we've been seeing it incrementally, like the electronic medical record stuck into the stimulus bill or things of that nature. With your vantage point on this, whether we get this bill or we don't, are we going to be stuck with government control of medicine either way?
I think things could go either way. Doctors could just cave in and decide to become serfs and mark time until they can retire. Or we could have enough of them, a critical mass somewhere, I don't know how many that is, maybe not very many, just saying, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to practice medicine for the benefit of our patients. We're going to rely on our patients only for payment. And if enough people become independent, declare independence, we could have a new golden age, where prices really come down, value goes up, innovation thrives. It could be that things will become so bad that people will finally decide, hey, maybe we ought to try freedom again. It worked back in 1776. Maybe it really is the one and only right way.
Yeah, I hope we're alive to see it. I think ultimately we'll have to come full circle, but it seems at this point like there are certainly major media is complicit with the Obama administration to the push to give us socialized medicine, whether we want it or not, under whatever name they choose to provide it. Now, the idea of doctors being the Achilles heel, being the component that says we're not practicing under this, the letter I mentioned before from the Florida surgeon was nothing short of brilliant. Are there, to your knowledge, a number of people like Dr. David McAllop who would walk away and say, I'm just not playing ball this way?
Oh, yes, and there are growing numbers, and it is encouraging that many medical associations, neurological surgeons, general surgeons, are splitting themselves off from the AMA and are making it clear that the AMA may have endorsed the House bill pretty much without reservations, but they don't.
Good. Well, that's really going to be our ace for enough people of repute to say I'm not partaking in the system. I wish more of them were featured more again on major media than are, because to turn on the local TV station or whatever, you'd believe that everybody and anybody thinks this is a good idea, and that those of us who know it's not, well, we're just uninformed. Uninformed kooks. And this is coming down fast. Like you say, it's coming down by the end of the year if it's coming down at all.
Yeah. And the other thing is the doctors would be considered just greedy and self-interested.
Right.
If they are opposed to it. But really, the doctors are not going to be the main ones who will be hurt. Some of them will quit. Some of them will adapt and they'll get along. The people who are going to be hurt are the patients, because the patients are at the bottom of the heap. There's all this emphasis on population health. And worse than that, I was just reading during the break this latest issue of JAMA, mm-hmm. the AMA's journal,
mm-hmm.
and they're worried about the health of the planet besides.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking, how will increasing life expectancy affect the ability to reduce carbon dioxide emissions?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are a plague on the planet. They breathe out carbon dioxide with every breath. And if we're going to make them live longer, it hurts the planet. You know, what does this mean for the practice of medicine?
Well, right there. There goes the Hippocratic Oath right out the window. These are supposed to be the people who are preserving life at any cost. And clearly that's not the case. And it's coming to a crisis. And to a degree, I think part of the push on the government is that they realize that all the baby boomers are going to be in Medicare soon. And if they can't spread those costs over the healthy young people, ensnaring them into a system, it's going to fall apart. But rather than look at ways to get all of us out of their control, they're going full circle the other way to make sure that before the baby boomers are using Medicare for the most part, that everybody will be ensnared. And I would assume that that's a primary motivation in this.
I think so. They're going to get a huge infusion of cash from younger people, many of whom have not chosen to buy insurance or have bought less expensive insurance. But very soon, we're going to see the clamps put on the delivery of medical care, and the old people are going to take it in the chin.
Absolutely. And that's
they're going to pay with their lives. The young people are going to pay with impoverishment and a decrease in their opportunities, and the old people are going to pay with their lives.
Right. Right. And what's interesting is you'd think if their goal was to, in fact, get the old people out of the system, whether it's above ground or below, one of the things that the government would tout is, sure, use any alternative practitioner you want that doesn't involve us. But instead, at the same time, the FDA here will say, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, because they're so responsible to Big Pharma that when somebody says, hey, I'm going to take care of my own health in the way I see fit, what they decide to do may be outlawed.
Well, it's worse than that. It's that old people are not free to pay a private physician out of their own pocket, to say outside of Medicare, unless the doctor completely opts out. If the, you know, the doctor can't afford to see him for more than 5 minutes, the patient wants an hour visit, which is what it would take to get to the bottom of their problems, the patient is not allowed to pay the doctor.
Right. Right, and that's true in Medicare right now, and that's the crux of the NHS system. When NHS will deny you a necessary treatment that here in the States we would all agree was necessary, you'd say, well, I'll pay privately. Well, if you do pay privately, not only will your doctors be dinged, but you as a citizen will no longer be able to get any NHS care whatsoever. So your choice is playing by all the rules or none of them. And we see that to a good degree exactly in Medicare. At this point, the Medicare patient has the right to do it, but the provider doesn't. So unless that person is so far out of the system, they can't try. And then if they are that far out of the system, very often the FDA will say, well, that's quackery, you can't do it.
Well, that's quackery is one of the things that the government will define.
Right. Right, and they've been defining it to a horrible degree already, and this will multiply that exponentially. So it's interesting how most of the debate I hear has to do with money, when in fact the real cost is your life, because more than anything else, your freedom of choice to choose the doctor and the treatment that you want is completely gone. And again, the idea that you choose your doctor, remember that's singular, you choose your gatekeeper if he'll take you.
And all this stuff about reducing costs, that's not what they mean. Everything in the bill adds to costs. More paperwork, more requirements, more people who are involved in the system and so on. All that increases costs. They're talking about putting a lid on expenditures. And the only way you can put a lid on expenditures when the costs are inevitably relentlessly going up is to deny people care.
Bingo. Okay, now what you study this really with your lifeblood. What am I not touching on that's important to this discussion?
I think that we've hit the high points. The most important one is freedom. Yeah. Without freedom, we are lost, and that's what the bill is about. It's about gaining control, reducing freedom. All this promise about, you know, taking care of people is just pure deception. They're going to force you to buy what they consider to be insurance. You'll be paying more for it, you'll be having less choices, you'll be losing the doctors and the care that you would prefer, and you're all going to be, your life is going to be subject to the careful scrutiny of the government at every step of the way, and of course your finances, the IRS, to make sure that you're putting enough into the system.
Right, exactly, and you're not exaggerating on that $25,000 fine or 1 year in jail if you're not compliant. Now, the other thing that may be, just politically speaking, the greatest outrage is the one thing that Obama promised his faithful followers on every campaign stop was, if you want the health care plan Congress has, you can have that. I haven't heard any talk that Congress is going to be subjugated to this.
Well, that's just a lie. Congress has voted against being subjected to it.
Bingo. And no one seems to be calling them on that. Because if it's not good enough for Congress, why is it good enough for any of us?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, it's an outrage, and on that alone, people should be able to see through the hype. And certainly this next week is going to be very interesting with regard to how the Senate tries to push this down our throat one way or another. And I thank you for the very good fight and everybody at AAPS. I hope you'll join us again.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Jane. Good luck.
Thank you, Raleigh.
Dr. Jane Orient, AAPSonline.org, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And as I say, the open letter you really should read. I've got a link to that, and it's Dr. David McCallop. He's a private practice brain and spine surgeon in St. Petersburg. He's a past president or president-elect of the Pinellas County Medical Association, and he's a president of the Florida Neurosurgical Society, on the board of the Florida Medical Association, on the Florida delegation to the AMA's key policymaking body. All right, so this is a guy who is no slouch, who is within the system, who normally you would think, well, if there was anything good about this, here's the guy that would be fighting for you. And he says no. In fact, he thinks that physicians are facing a certain death professionally, and only doctors themselves can avert that. And he said, as a physician, you will not want the kind of medical care that your junior colleagues will provide to you when you need it. And I can tell you with certainty, there's only one and only one goal of those who change our healthcare system. Pay doctors less, force them to provide less medical care. Doctors will be forced to comply. You will be told to practice in a de facto capitated model where any dollar spent on patients above the arbitrary threshold of a government or corporate bureaucrat will lead you to be labeled inefficient and penalize. Hospital-based doctors will be slaves to hospitals. Congressman Tom Price, who is a doctor from Georgia, is right when he says we must not allow public option mandates or the government to define quality. It's so on the money, and he talks about all it is having doctors comply. If you comply with reporting, you won't be hurt as badly. You comply with quality, what government defines it as, you might escape a sanction. If you comply with rationing, you may be paid slightly more. If you follow so-called best practice and are labeled a meaningful user, you might get a little relief. If you do what you're told, keep your mouth shut, we may let you keep your license and your practice. He says, but I am a professional. I will not be told how to practice medicine by a hospital administrator, corporate CEO, or government committee. I am a professional. I will not be used as a rationing tool to save money for others. I am a professional, and I will set my prices and give my patients the time they deserve to make medical decisions that benefit them. I am a professional, and I can't be replaced by a nurse practitioner or other provider that claims to be able to practice at a cut rate. I am a professional, and I will work to make sure I hold my colleagues to the highest standards we expect of each other's and not accept sham peer review and disruptive physician star chambers. But like you, I am also compassionate and will work to make sure that government and charity assistance is there for the needy and not an economic unsuitable entitlement that benefits no one, even though they're covered. A great, great letter. And there's a lot more in terms of if you are a doctor, what you can do. But if you are a patient, you need to be aware. We'll pick it up right there. I'll tell you more about your health records being available to the world and like that. We didn't even get into vaccinations.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
Biggie Nevins and Buddy Holiday are doing the WCKR twist.
Look, do you want to go on this flight or don't you?
What's your movie?
No movie on this flight.
No movie?
No, sir. A rodeo.
Let your voice be heard. Join hands for Rockefeller. Let Rocky lead the way. Join hands.
Hot dog, here's a dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
that's the Lunatic Fringe, all right, but Friday night, the time is right for music trivia. None of the hits all of the time. Non-musical trivia, too, coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, an hour from now, East Coast time. However, as has become tradition on Fridays in our first hour, we talk to someone in radio or records from back in the day through the present, and someone who qualifies for all of that and more. In fact, I was telling him last week that other than assorted and sundry R&B obscure artists, the only continual request we have had for anybody on this show is for Dr. Demento. And when the screener arrived tonight, who is Ed, and I mentioned Dr. Demento was on, the first thing he said, I was listening to him since I was a kid. Of course, when people say that to me, it makes me feel like a fossil, but it's also great to know. So, Dr. Demento, welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Woo-woo! Wind up your radio. Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
Hello, everybody. I'm fine.
It's so good to hear from you. And, you know, I tell you, I can't admit that I heard you when I was a kid because I was already grown like you. But the first time I heard you, I guess, was a local show in Los Angeles. I was just taken.
Well, thank you.
And then by the 70s, you syndicated this nationally.
Yeah, starting in 74.
And to this day.
Yeah.
Now, firstly, I understand you're on XM. What channel?
It's Channel 40, Deep Tracks.
Okay.
And it's Sunday night at midnight going into Monday Eastern Time.
Perfect. Perfect. Now, of course, from 74 on syndicated and prior to that local, certainly that takes up an awful lot of records. But before we get into it, what got you on the path to dementia?
Well, I always enjoyed comedy, I guess ever since the day when I was 4 years old and my dad brought home a copy of Spike Jonze's Cocktails for Two, which was actually new at that time. So that was always something that I enjoyed all the way through high school. I went through high school in the golden age of rock and roll, so to speak, so I was very much into that too. I really got very much into blues and R&B, and that was the main focus of the Dr. Demento show when it first started in 1970. But I'd throw open the phone lines to requests, and I soon found out that really a large number of the requests were for funny songs, things like the Purple People Eater and the Monster Mash and Transfusion. So the funny stuff gradually took over the show, and I eventually expanded it. It started out just with the rock and roll novelties from the 50s and 60s, but I expanded it quickly to other kinds of funny music, like going back to the days of Spike Jonze and also contemporary funny songs.
Oh, yeah, great stuff. And, of course, for those of us in L.A., nothing probably will ever top Pico and Sepulveda.
Right. Yeah, that was my first hit.
And a wonderful one it was. In fact, when I moved back to L.A., I was in West Los Angeles, and any time I'd be on Sepulveda, right passing Anawalt Lumber there at Pico, I would, in my heart, be Pico and Sepulveda, Pico.
It's still there.
Well, undoubtedly. Where did you unearth that?
The Salvation Army store in Santa Monica, maybe 2 miles west of the famous corner of Pico and Sepulveda, in 1965.
And when was it recorded?
1947.
Wow. And, of course, when you find a gem like that, I'm sure the first thing you want to know is information about it, and this is long pre-internet. How did you ever discover anything about that song?
Oh, in bits and pieces. It turned out, as I learned over time, especially after I started playing it on the show, that Felix Figueroa, who recorded the song, was actually a pseudonym for Freddie Martin, famous orchestra leader of those days.
Oh, yeah.
And the song was written by two men who were quite eminent in their time, Eddie Maxwell, who wrote many pieces of special material for Spike Jonze, and also wrote some I Love Lucy scripts along with other TV shows.
Oh, that's classic.
And then the music was written by Jewel Stein, very well-known pop composer of that era.
Oh, you betcha. In fact, people with a lot of credentials, no wonder there were pseudonyms involved in it. But I would assume that you made that more of a hit than they ever had previously.
I think it's safe to say that. I mean, as soon as the Dr. Demento show started to focus more on the funny stuff, I remembered that record, which I had in my collection for 5 years by that time, and got it out, and people just loved it right away.
When did the Funny Five start?
Let's see. It started as the Top Ten when I had a four-hour, more of a marathon-type show, and that would have been in 72.
Yeah.
And when the national show started to take root, it was decided to make that a Funny Five, so there'd be less repetition from one week to another. And so it's been the Funny Five ever since.
And it exists to this day.
Yes.
So with that many decades, I mean, we're really talking about spanning different generations on this show.
Oh, yes.
Anything that has always remained, not necessarily every week, but always a perennial fave in that Funny Five?
Sure. Since the late 70s, anyway, our most requested song of all time is on the Funny Five again in the last show that I taped, Dead Puppies by Ogden Edsel.
Yes.
neck and neck with that is Fish Heads by Barnes. And then our number three most requested song, and somebody figured out that it had been played more times on the show than anything else, is one that was also a hit nationwide just before I started the show. They're Coming to Take Me Away, Ha Ha, by Napoleon XIV.
Oh, sure, but you go further. You play Split Level Head.
Yes, right. I go deep on Napoleon the
Yes,
14th.
Yes, and you know Napoleon, Jerry Samuels, lives right here in Philadelphia.
Oh, yes. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm not sure he wants his secret out, but yeah, you do go deep in Napoleon the 14th, which makes it so wonderful. Now, of course, stumbling on records like Pico and Sepulveda is one thing, but looking for them is another. Was there any holy grail that you've been looking for years and couldn't find?
Oh, Spike Jones made a record once called What is a DJ?
Oh, my gosh.
Or What is a Disc Jockey? It was issued only in Australia. Now, I have a tape of it. I made it into a CD, so I can play it. But copies of the original 78 are hard to come by in this country, so I don't own that. I suppose that would make my Spike Jones collection more complete.
Oh.
of course, I'm also into many other kinds of music, like, say, blues, for instance.
Yeah.
And there's some blues records, we know they exist, but nobody's ever found a copy.
Oh, right,
go back to the 20s.
Sure, you betcha. And, you know, I think a lot of people listen to you don't know that you have quite a music background of many genres. Have you ever thought about doing a straight show?
It's crossed my mind from time to time, but people know me for funny stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think you could easily be Dr. Demento. You'd
right.
have to
In fact, back in the early 80s, Westwood One, the network I was with at that time, got fairly serious about launching a straight version of the show, but for various reasons it just didn't happen, but it's there somewhere in the back of my mind.
Now, after time went on, not only were you unearthing these records, but you were inspiring them. I think you're single-handedly responsible for the career of Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, sure. Yes, absolutely.
And I know that he'd admit it, but he's not the only one. Who else along the way was a perennial on your show?
Well, Barnes & Barnes, not only Fish Heads, but many other songs. And, there's a lot of people, especially in the last few years, it's really become an underground thing. You know, major labels just don't release very many funny music songs anymore. There's Ray Stevens, who we really haven't heard from him for a while.
Oh,
and there's
long
Weird
time.
Al.
Right.
And there's not many more in terms of people who regularly do funny stuff on major labels. But underground, it's really flourishing. Like, there's a young man in Madison, Wisconsin, called the Great Luke Ski, who has had the most requested song on the show the last 2 years running.
Really? What is it?
Let's see, 2 years ago it was Peter Parker, based on Spider-Man, and last year it was called Stealing Like a Hobbit, based on one of the Lord of the Rings movies, the second one. So Luke specializes in taking pop culture phenomena and making comedy rap parodies about them.
And, of course, there in Madison, it's the home of What Do You Know, Michael Feldman's show. So
hopefully
he's gotten some airtime on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them that I remember that I just loved at the time, must have been latter 70s, was T. Bowden, Stankus, Red, White, and Existential Blue.
Existential Blue, yes.
Yeah.
Sterling, Connecticut.
Who was T. Bowden, Stankus?
Well, at that time, he was kind of a soft rocker and a folk singer. He'd do either acoustic or electric gigs. He's kind of gotten a little more into the Christian thing now, but the Existential Blues was just huge. That would bring down the house whenever he did a folk gig, mostly around New England, and he sent me a record of it, and it was equally huge on my show, and I still play it a couple times a year.
Oh, yeah, it was just huge, and it was like a full production on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me, you know, we talk about the perennial faves, the Fish Heads and stuff that have always been there. Anything that goes away but seems to come back generation after generation?
Oh, Alan Sherman, for instance.
Okay, Hello, Mother, Hello, Father.
Right, and his hundreds of other, well, at least 100 other parodies that he did.
Oh, yes.
He was a major inspiration for Weird Al, of course.
Oh, really? No, I did not know that.
Yeah, well, Weird Al, when he was a kid, would listen to my show, and one of the main things that caught his ear was Alan Sherman and the parodies he did based on folk songs and classical pieces.
Right.
And Al thought, well, why don't I do something like that, but with current rock and roll songs?
And it worked out perfectly.
Yes.
All right, so XM Channel 40. Now, you're also on the air across the country on a number of stations, right?
Yeah.
So that's great. Do you have a station list on your website?
No, we don't, for various political reasons.
Okay.
However, if you go to Google or your favorite search engine and put in Dr. Demento, you will sooner or later come across a station list.
All right, so, but in the meantime...
Thanks to various fan-supported websites.
Which is great. So drdemento.com, though, people can go to and find out about you at the moment.
And all the CDs that we have available on Rhino and other labels.
Oh, great.
And lots of other fun things on drdemento.com.
Wonderful. Dr. Demento is my guest, and I don't think there is a person listening right now who can't claim at one time or another they weren't glued to the radio for the Dr. Demento show. In fact, I got a great story about a politician and Dr. Demento. He might not even know this, but as I say, every walk of life, anywhere you've been in the last 30 years at least, Dr. Demento has been there with you.
Oh boy, it's the Raleigh James Show.
If you're a radio fan, the Sea Crane catalog is an absolute resource. All the best radios, in fact, they have radios that rival anything ever made, and clearly the best radios available today. Things like the CC Radio SW, you will not get better performance. It's AM, it's FM, it's all the shortwave bands. It's got a digital readout so you always know where you are in the dial, but it's got true rotary fine-tuning so you fine-tune like the radios of yesteryear. If you want to control the bandwidth, if you want to control the RF gain, all of that is available to you. If you want to set it and forget it, that's fine too. And of course, the backbone of the AM section is that twin coil ferrite antenna, which is just a marvel. In fact, you can buy them separately. If you have a favorite receiver in your component system, but let's face it, most of those get lousy reception, you put a twin coil ferrite on that, it will be a powerhouse. You'll be stunned. I know I was the first time I used it. But whether it's radios like the CC Radio SW or antennas like the twin coil ferrite, or whether it's things like the pillow speaker, a great inexpensive argument settler, you will hear everything in full fidelity and the person next to you will hear nothing at all. So if you like to listen to radio in bed, this is it. Or whether it's Wi-Fi radio, a way to listen to every stream online but listen with the convenience of a radio. Put it anywhere you want and it sounds great too. It's all in a wonderful catalog. It's a radio lover's dream. CCRadio.com. Anytime. Online, 24 hours a day, ccradio.com. Not only great products, but great information as well. If you'd like to call them, they've got wonderful customer service. Operators are not standing by, but they'll be back tomorrow, and they'd love to talk to you at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. They'll send you out a catalog. Or right now, go to ccradio.com, and you tell them Raleigh sent you.
Finally, that useless information in your head is about to pay off. Friday Night Trivia on the Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh at 888-876-5593. 8888-RAWLEIGH.
Ask a fish head anything you want to. They won't answer. They can't talk. No.
Just classic, like so many things you hear on the Dr. Demento Show, and I am thrilled that he is my guest this hour on the Raleigh James Show. And yeah, I don't think there's a person around who can listen to that without at least having a smile on their face.
Right.
Just great stuff. Yeah, I was going to tell you that in 92, I was going over some campaign stuff with Andre Marou, who was a libertarian candidate for president.
Oh, yeah.
And Andre was a nice guy, but not terribly hip. And so he's looking at who his who his potential backers are and all that. And he said, and then there's a guy in California, a demented. And I said, you mean Demento? And he said, yeah, who's that? I said, who's that? That's the best endorsement you've ever gotten. And I said, if he'd vote for you, hell, anybody should. So I remember that it was a while, and we got him tapes and everything, and he finally, you know, got in the spirit. But at first, it was just like I was telling him that Martians were endorsing him. So it was truly wonderful, and thanks for the political take. We appreciated that.
Why, sure.
Now, Mitch from Austin, Texas, wrote and wanted to know, he said that one of the oldest recorded wax roll records he heard on your show was Dementia, some guy ranting insane stuff and laughing. What's the deal?
Oh, I think he's referring to the Ravings of John McCullough, which was done just at the very end of the 19th century, 1898. And John McCullough was an actor who died of syphilis, if I
oh my God
right. And so he went insane. And that was in the newspapers and everything, because he was a celebrity. And a couple of the different companies that made the Cylinder records at that time put out records called The Ravings of John McCullough, which purported to be this madman going, they say I'm mad, raving mad. They probably weren't really him, but... anything to sell Cylinders.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
And of course, when you said Ravings of John McCullough, it sounded a lot like Dean in some political speeches of late.
Right.
So, man, that's classic. Now, of course, the other Ravings record I remember was the legendary Stardust Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
Doing Paralyzed or whatever it was.
Right.
But was he serious? Did you ever figure out whether he meant that record?
Yeah. To him, it was entertainment.
Yeah.
I don't think he meant it to be a spoof. I mean, it was just his exuberant way of singing.
And it was just a classic spoof, so that leads me to wonder, because I know, like, on some of your CDs, you've got things like Surfin' Bird, The Trashman.
Right.
What percentage of the records you play do you think were people not trying to be demented, but trying to put forth a piece of entertainment?
Oh, 5 or 10, something like that.
Okay, so it is relatively low. Most of the people
right.
had...
I could play more. I mean, there's outsider music. There's a guy in New Jersey named Irwin Chusid who really makes... the whole focus of his presentation.
Uh-huh.
It's just a little part of mine, but it's a fun part.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, and just...
Outsider music. In fact, just last... there's a guy called Wildman Fisher who
yes.
for many years... sang on the streets of Los Angeles.
Yes.
My name is Larry. Yeah, and other songs. Come on, let's merry go, merry go, merry go round. Boop, boop, boop. And I was interviewed for a documentary about him, and I just saw the first rough cut of it last night. That's when that comes out. Hopefully later this year. That's going to really impress a lot of people, I think.
Oh yeah. Now Wildman Fisher is—he's no longer with us, is he?
Oh, he's still around.
Is he really?
The latest about him is he is in a home now.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Why
but,
is that not a surprise?
Yeah, but he lived on the streets for many years. He recorded a famous album that was produced by Frank Zappa,
mm-hmm.
and a couple more albums produced by Barnes & Barnes, the same two gentlemen who just sang Fishheads a few moments ago.
Right. Oh, man. And of course, Zappa was so prolific. I'm sure that he
yes.
was responsible for a lot of the things that you've played.
Mm-hmm.
Because he
oh, yeah.
would just come up again and again. Now, when you look at a show that spanned all these decades, and we're getting into a horrible era of political correctness, I'm sorry to say,
yes.
is there anything that you used to play in the early 70s or so that you just cannot play anymore?
Well, Arthur Godfrey had a hit song in 1949 called Slap Her Down Again, Paw. The lyrics were... it was supposed to be about a family in the mountains, because humor based on hillbillies was popular at that time. And it went, I won't try to sing it, but it went, slap her down again, Pa, slap her down again. Make her tell us more, Pa, tell us where she's been. We don't want our neighbors talking about our kin. Slap her down again, Pa, slap her down again.
Oh.
Perfectly Straight by yeah. Arthur Godfrey, who at that time was one of the most famous entertainers in America.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was perfectly mainstream humor.
Right.
But, you know, making light of battering women in a domestic circumstance, that is not... consider it as funny as it used to be, which, with good reason.
Yeah, which the first thing that came to mind to me was Phil Spector. He kissed me, and he hit me, and it felt like a kiss.
Right.
Now, I assume that that also would be off the list.
I don't know. We haven't had a request for that in a while. I don't know. I have made up my mind about that one.
Well, yeah, and considering where he is right now, maybe that would...
Right.
Absolutely. Dr. Demento is my guest. And yes, by email, I'll take a question, or you can relay them to Ed, who is screening the calls, and that's fine. You can check out The Good Doctor on XM on Channel 40 Deep Tracks, or you can go to drdemento.com and read all about it, including where you can order some of this great, great stuff. So I'm thrilled to have them, and we will continue finding out exactly what else has been played in the last, oh, gee, I don't know, what is it now? 30, how many years? I don't want to think about it. A lot of years, many generations. And isn't that interesting now? Kids who were first listening back in 1970, their parents would probably say, who the hell are you listening to? And now, I would assume it's sort of like, oh yeah, I listen to him too. Oh man. Great stuff. Dr. Demento on The Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show.
Dead puppies, dead puppies, dead puppies aren't much fun. They don't come when you call. They don't chase squirrels at all. Dead puppies aren't much fun.
It's about to happen. That obscure song only you remember is going to be played on the radio. Friday Night Trivia on the Raleigh James Show.
In the hall. Dead puppies aren't much fun. No,
and he sounds so sincere,
no,
too, doesn't he? All right, hear this on the radio. You know who's got to be close behind it, and that's Dr. Demento, who's joining us tonight. And I was just checking out your website, and it is a repository of marvelous information.
Oh, thank you.
Including, for anybody who's listening, all the songs you remember. You've got artist addresses. You also tell them if they're on your CDs and where, but as well as how to order directly from the artist or contact them.
Uh-huh.
And that's wonderful. I don't think there's probably a person listening who can't think of something they heard on your show wanting to know more about it, and this is the place.
All right, thanks.
That's just great. You did a good job on this site.
Thank you.
Now, somebody wanted to know about something you played called Short Dresses by J.J. Cameron.
Oh, yes. The main claim to fame of that record, I suppose, is that I play piano on it.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't have much fame, let me tell you, but that came out in 1964. J.J. Cameron was an R&B singer.
Yeah.
Who had signed with a local label in L.A., and at that time I was playing in a blues band at the Ashgrove nightclub in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I used to play piano.
Wow.
I don't play piano as well as I play records, but I used to bang away at the piano in this band. And this fellow heard us and said, well, we're recording this R&B singer. Why don't you guys come out and play on the record? So we did, and because the singer really didn't have much of a tune for this song he'd written lyrics for. We kind of jammed around in the studio till we came up with a very simple blues melody, and I was given credit for the music.
Wow.
I think it sold maybe 300 copies, if well, that.
Now, has it been on re-released on any
no.
of your CDs?
Not yet. It really isn't all that funny, but I've played it a few times on the show because I'm the piano banger.
Oh, sure. That's a great story.
Yeah,
now,
right.
When's the first time you put out a CD? Well, it would have been an album, but when's the first time you did that?
Dr. Demento's Delights for Warner Brothers in 76.
All right. Now, was that Warner Special Products where they cleared everything?
No, it was plain old Warner Brothers Records. You see, okay. That was my day job at that time.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you promoting records? Or
no, I mostly did things like write for their publicity department.
Okay.
And they also had sampler albums they put out twice a year. They put out a 2-LP sampler album. They'd advertise these on the inner sleeves of a lot of their albums.
I remember
you got 2 LPs for $2. And you get a track by Fleetwood Mac, a track by the Doobie Brothers or whoever was the big star at that time, and then you get a lot of tracks by some of the new artists that Warner Brothers was trying to break, so to speak. So I put these things together, and I worked for Warner Brothers from 71 to 79. It was my day job in the early days of the radio show. So they, of course, when the radio show started to get quite popular, they agreed to put out a compilation album, and that was Dr. Demento's Delights.
Now, of course, that sounds great to the public, but as you well know, clearance is involved, and people have to okay you putting their
record.
So with that, was there anybody you wanted on your demented list who said, no way are you getting this?
There have been from time to time.
Really?
Like we've had problems sometimes clearing things by Frank Zappa, for instance,
really?
Or Monty Python. We were able on at least one of my albums to get tracks by these people, but it was oftentimes a struggle. And sure, there have been many times, and it's more difficult now than it used to be to put out compilation albums like that.
Is that because you can't find the rights?
Or? No. No, it's because the major labels are much less willing to let go of the rights to one of their competitors.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Because
I would think in many of these cases that these labels would have never heard of most of these records.
That is true. But they're guarding their rights more jealously now than, say, they were 5-10 years ago.
Really?
So that is a problem, though. We're still going to be... keep looking for more compilation albums from me.
Oh, I would certainly hope so. And you know, that's so sad, because I bet you if Zappa was alive and you gave him a call, he'd love to be on these albums.
Well, yeah, and like I say, we were able to get one of Zappa's most famous songs, Don't Eat the Yellow Snow, for my very best of Dr. Demento CD. So it does happen, but there are difficulties.
That's so, because I remember years ago when Rick Dees was first on Kiss and came out with When Sonny Sniffs Glue. he was sued into the next century. So how could they do that? And I kind of laughed, and I said, it's probably the most that record has sold in years. Why would they complain?
Well, a song parody is a little different animal.
Yeah.
Than, it's a whole different animal, actually, from licensing a pre-existing recording.
And I'd say that Weird Al probably knows the ins and outs of that pretty well.
Oh, yes. The Supreme Court made a decision that made it more difficult for copyright owners to sue people who do parodies.
Good.
Yeah, that was the Two Live Crew decision a few years ago over their version of the song Pretty Woman, the Roy Orbison song.
One can only imagine with Two Live Crew exactly what that sounded like.
Right.
Oh, man. Now, I was also seeing where you are appearing March 5th through 7th at MarsCon.
Oh, yes.
And that's your hometown, isn't it, Minneapolis?
Minneapolis, yes.
Yeah, I remembered that. Mm-hmm. And, you have a legitimate background. Don't you have a PhD in something? You're a real doctor?
Well, I have a master's degree in folk music studies, which was a legitimate field of study back in the 60s.
Who
UCLA
issued
offered
that?
A master's degree in folk music studies, and I got one.
Wow, I was going to say, what institute of higher learning? But I bet you that they don't offer that anymore.
You are correct.
Oh, well, that's great, though. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You're absolutely perfect for this. Now, the other thing that I noticed was after the show got rolling in syndication, I'm sure you got tons of unsolicited material.
Yeah, well, that's how Weird Al Yankovic got started.
Yeah, and I remember a guy I worked with who later was might still be running ABC Audio in L.A. decided that he would belch Duke of Earl.
Okay.
And you played it.
All right.
And it was, I think it was the guy's crowning moment, you know.
We still get about 20 CDs a week.
Really?
Now it's we still get cassettes, but mostly people burn them on CDs now, of original songs. Everything from fully professional products recorded with beautiful sound to little kids recording their nasal secretions.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You don't listen to them all yourself at this point,
do
you?
Oh, yes, I do.
You do?
Yes. I at least sample each one. I mean, if there's a CD that has 30 tracks on it and the first 7 just don't do anything for me at all, I can't guarantee I'll hear number 29.
Yeah, but, I would think that that's prudent, to say the least.
But I sample each one.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, for on your website, does it tell people where they can mail these?
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you. It's P.O. Box 884 in Culver City, California, 90232. But again, drdemento.com will give you the details.
Okay. Boy, still in Culver City all these years
later. Oh, yes. You get a nice post office box like that, you don't...
Ever.
Yeah. You don't just throw it away.
That's right. Yeah, you keep going and getting the mail, even if it's 30 miles from home.
I went and got it today.
All right. Now, how much mail are you generating these days?
Oh, certainly hundreds of letters, and like I said, something in the neighborhood of 20 submissions.
Wow. Now, of the people who are listening now, how many are lifers like myself versus somebody who's just been listening in the last couple of years?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, people come and go, of course, and I'm into my third generation in some families.
That's what I mean. That's got to be amazing when it's somebody's grandparent who heard you.
Uh-huh.
And we should also mention, because we've had some calls, it's drdemento.com.
Yeah.
Don't spell out doctor.
Right.
Yeah, drdemento.com. Someone wanted to know if you played any of the early Paul Shanklin stuff, the guy who's Rush's parody writer?
I have played a couple of his things. I figure he gets enough exposure on Rush. I don't have to really go to the wall for him, but I have played a few of his things.
Politically, do you get a lot of political parodies?
Not a whole lot. My show tends to have a reputation as being not all that political, I guess, which is true.
Well, yeah, specializing in dead puppies and his is just classic. And I would think, are there any over the years like that of themes you can think of that, you know, write a song about this and it's more likely to make it?
Well, they tend to come and go. Of course, certain news stories, like, you know, now it's Janet and Justin.
You've already had parodies on that?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yes, and of course, when we've gone to war in the Middle East, there have been songs about that. There were songs about 9/11, though not many that were humorous.
Well, glad to hear it. Yeah, and that'd be a touchy one, I'd imagine.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not sure I'd go there.
Mostly it's the news stories that are a little more on the lighter side, like Janet and Justin.
Or has Martha Stewart raised any interest?
Yes, there have been a few about her.
Yeah, I would think that she would be full of stuff.
For some reason, the songs I've gotten about her all assume that she's guilty, and I'm kind of a little reluctant to try the case on my radio show.
Oh, sure. But I would also assume that probably your radio show will have no bearing on the outcome.
Let's hope.
Yeah, right. Because that really would be frightening. And speaking of that, of course, how many different O.J. parodies have you gotten?
Oh, well, there were at least 100, I'm sure.
Okay, yeah, I would think that probably still comes in every now and then again.
Yeah, once in a great while, yeah.
Anything on Phil Spector?
No, surprisingly. You'd think, you know, I know Phil. I've been to the house where that happened, and a couple of his previous houses. And,
right.
Well,
I remember years ago when I was still living with Bill Drake, he came home one day and said, "Raleigh, we have to go to Phil Spector's house for dinner." And I said, "All right." He said, "But make sure you call someone and let them know where we are." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, sometimes if Phil likes you, he doesn't let you leave." I said, "Forget it. Count me out." But
we did run till late in the evening on some of those evenings.
Yeah, I would bet. And of course, he was instrumental when Humble Harve sadly had killed his wife. It was Phil who bailed him out and you know took care of him and all that. And so at least from that standpoint, I thought, well, hopefully somebody's doing that for him. But what a bizarre turn of events.
Yes.
And so many people I know have said, you know, it was just a matter of time. This is not the least bit surprising. Now, you knew him personally. Were you surprised?
Nothing Phil would do would surprise me. I mean, I was dismayed. I said, oh my God, really?
Of course.
I first heard it, but you know, nothing. When I think about it, nothing could surprise me about him.
Yeah, isn't that odd? Bigger than life, and not one parody on it. Now, how about Robert Blake?
There have been a few on that.
All right. Now, of course,
I don't know why nothing on Phil, but maybe there will be still.
Well, now that we've
when it goes to trial
right,
or whatever.
Now that we've raised the issue, of course, maybe somebody will do something. But how about, and this is, I guess, kind of a touchy one in some ways, but maybe not, Lacey and Scott Peterson.
I think that's just too grim.
Okay.
No, I haven't heard anything
about
that.
Okay, good. So
I much prefer things that are timeless, like fish heads or dead puppies.
Which is wonderful. Now, percentage-wise, how much do you get that is timeless?
Oh, probably 90%.
Oh, well, that's great.
At least, I mean, there's a lot of things that are parodies of current hits, but the subject matter isn't necessarily about a current event.
Well, yeah, like My Bologna.
Right. Sure. Well, now we get a lot of parodies of Hey Ya. That's certainly topping the parody list now.
Yeah. You had a female for a while who was doing a lot of stuff. I remember she did one to Olivia Newton-John's Physical. Who was that?
Oh, I think that was Sulu.
I think it was.
Yeah, right.
What happened to her?
She's now she's a mother, and she's also a school teacher in the Los Angeles public schools.
May her kids never find out about her past.
Oh, I think they know.
There goes discipline right out the window. Now, somebody wanted to know from 1978, they remember a song called Warshoop. Do you remember
Warshoop?
Warshoop?
Yeah,
what is
called No Laughing.
No Laughing. Who were they?
Gosh, I'd have to go to my files to find out like where they were from. Got it in my files somewhere.
Warshoop.
Warshoop. It was a 45 RPM record.
Okay.
And I think it had something to do with Oriental food. I haven't heard that in 10 or 15 years, but the band, the group, or whatever it was called No Laughing. I remember that.
I'll be darned.
And it was kind of vaguely in doo-wop style.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, now I want to hear this. Now I want you to play this on one of your shows.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds great. And, of course, a lot of people who listen to this show love old R&B and doo-wop. And I never really thought about it because most of the stations that I heard your show on were traditionally like the Metro Media progressive stations or AOR stations. Were you on many oldie stations?
From time to time. We're on several now.
Really?
Yeah.
And in terms of oldies music like doo-wop or, even R&B ballads from the 60s or 50s,
yeah.
you ever get much of the way of that in these nutso records?
Oh, now and then.
Yeah?
Yeah, like one artist that I'm really impressed with now, one of the younger artists I play, his name is Logan Whitehurst.
Uh-huh.
And he does on one of his albums, he does a song called Skinny Dip, and it's really a very nice impression of 70s slow jams.
Oh, great.
That kind of music.
That's neat. That's just...
It's the lyrics go Skinny Dip with me.
Yeah.
And it's the humor, because in addition to taking off her clothes, the woman who he's trying to get the skinny dip with him is invited to take off various body parts as well.
Oh, really?
So that's the humor.
Oh, that's just wonderful, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, Logan is certainly one of the very promising younger artists who may not be getting much play in the mainstream radio or mainstream press or anything like that, but there are a lot of tremendously talented younger people who are doing funny music. I mean, it may not get them on the top 40 stations, but they have a calling to do funny songs, and they send them to me.
And they really there really is just a plethora of this. I know, like here in Philadelphia, a guy who was on QVC for over 15 years, Steve Bryant, is always doing parodies, and a number of them are just hilarious. And I'm sure for every one like that, there's probably 500 we don't know about. But on the other hand, I would assume they all know you.
Yeah, I think so.
So therefore, they know at least somewhere they can send for exposure, which is just great. But in terms of looking at it as a whole, we mentioned the Timeless, the Dead Puppies, and things like that. But as far as what's coming out, does it go in waves, like maybe a certain amount of political stuff and then none or what have you?
Oh, yeah. Well, one hit on my show will inspire others like it.
Right. Right.
So there's that influence.
Absolutely, that makes sense. Now, you've been doing this for, over three decades.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to go to that proverbial desert island and could only take your funny five, what would it be?
Well, I suppose it would have to be fish heads and dead puppies, because if I ever ran into somebody else on that desert island, I'd want to have songs that I could play for them that would make them laugh.
And that would do it.
Yeah, but to tell the truth, I guess if I were taking my own stuff to a desert island,
right,
I'd take Beethoven, Bartok, Robert Johnson.
Oh, no.
Timeless music that is
wonderful.
Oh, no.
Really?
Sorry about that.
Oh, no.
Feet
of clay. Oh, no.
Well, you have to understand, though, something about the Dr. Demento show is it crosses all the musical genres.
It truly does. I would agree with that.
And I know that along the way I've been able to introduce people to genres outside of what they normally listen to. Like somebody who only hears rock and roll will hear other things.
Sure. And that's absolutely the truth. And actually, it makes a lot of sense, because I'm sure that when you do this for a living week after week, one of the things about anything that's humorous is after you hear it for the 900th time, it's just not as funny. And I would assume that has to be true, not to your audience per se, but at least to you.
Well, that's one of the reasons I do musical humor, because it doesn't wear out as fast.
That's true, too. All right, Dr. Domenico is our guest. I want you to go to the website, DrDemento. It is great. It is just a repository for information. You wonder about the songs he's played. You'll probably find out even where to write the artists right now, as well as events that are coming up. And the 2004 Demento Society membership, you'll find out about that, as well as you can check out the show on XM on Deep Tracks Channel 40. And it's just marvelous stuff. I've got a few more questions, and like I say, it's amazing to me. Got a number of emails from people who are saying, this is great, I love hearing the doctor. And I think that more than any other person we could have on, truly awe-inspiring. So yes, I guess humor unites.
Oh boy, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Back when I was a kid, life was going swell. Till something happened, blew everything to hell. That night my daddy stumbled in, all pale and weak. Set a woman up the block, just gave birth to a geek. Mom said, sell it to the circus, what the heck? Dad said, nope, this one's a pencil neck. And if there's one thing lower than a sideshow freak, it's a gritty, scum-sucking, pencil-neck geek.
It's about to happen. That obscure song only you remember is going to be played on the radio. Friday Night Trivia on The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh at 888-876-5593. 888-RAALEIGH.
Pencil-neck geek, gritty, freak, scum-sucking, pee-head with a lousy physique. He's a one-man, no-cut,
oh, that romantic, soothing, tasteful dinner hour conversation. Nothing like Freddie Blassie. And, in fact, Mitch thought about it, saying that first time he heard that, he couldn't stop laughing. And not only that, but we have heard from, I got to find him here. He was here somewhere a minute ago. Somebody who brought Dr. Domenico to Laramie and is willing to admit it. So I'm sure that a lot of your clearances came from program directors who just absolutely adored the show rather than had to be convinced of carrying it.
Oh, that's true.
Which
is true even today.
Yeah, and it was Mick McLean in Laramie, Wyoming, who brought you in the early 80s, and he's listening and says hi. But
hi.
A number of people, as I say, calling in and writing in, and drdemento.com. Mm-hmm. May it be on another 30 years. No plans
Thank
to
you.
Stop it, is there?
Oh, no.
Excellent.
We're doing fine.
Well, everybody loves you, and I thank you for taking a Friday night out with us, and I hope you'll do it again sometime.
Pleasure is mine. I certainly would love to do that.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Don't forget to stay demented.
Made my night. Thanks. All right. So, Dr. Domenico, the best and the only, clearly. So, you can check that out at DrDemento and get a lot of information. All right, so it's a lot of fun. We will continue with trivia. We'll reveal what you didn't know last week and ask you some new things, as well as come up with the stragglers that are still hanging out there. Got some advertising, got some song lyrics and more. So you can call in and play anytime, 888-876-5593, 888-RAALEIGH for the next couple hours. We got email questions too, and I'll explain how that works, because it's not exactly the free-for-all it has been in the past. But we will continue this nonsense next hour with you on the Raleigh James Show as Horst Jankowski takes us out. Now, there's a name for the Dr. Domenico Show. I'm not sure I ever did anything novelty, but certainly name-wise would qualify, don't you think?
The Raleigh James Show.